Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Ma'at Hotep. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and as usual, we are always very, very happy to be able to broadcast to you live and in living color. And we want to wish everyone a productive, progressive, powerful 2013. There's so much going on in the world, needless to say, and certainly there's so much more that will be going on, but hopefully we are here and you're there, and with that together we can move forward and not only be prepared, but also be ready for real victories. Before we begin tonight's program, we want to, of course, give thanks and praises to our Creator. And certainly, we always are very mindful and appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. Tonight's program is very, very interesting. I had the opportunity to talk with a brother yesterday, as a matter of fact, and knew immediately that we had to get him on right away. And not only that, that we would continue to build with him in the near future. Of course, we've heard over the past few weeks or so about a lynching or an alleged suicide, shall we say, but we know it was a lynching. You've heard of it, I'm sure, or, you know, got some whim of it, but we're going to talk about that tonight, but also talk about a brother who literally investigated two cases in Dover, Delaware, which is not far at all from where the national headquarters of the Million Woman March is here in Philadelphia. It's you know, relatively close by, maybe an hour or so. But the bottom line is, here we are in 2013, so-called 2013, in the so-called 21st century, and we are still hearing, seeing, comprehending murders of our people by way of hanging. Well, this brother is now under attack. He investigated the hanging, and as a result of his continued search for the truth and providing awareness to the community, he has been fired from his job. And also, because there was a rally on campus, so by the way, the brother that we're speaking of is Brother Jihai Issa, who is a professor at one of the colleges there in Dover. And because he was, you know, very adamant about being involved and, you know, working with the students who were very concerned about this issue, he has been fired from his job. And, again, there was a rally on campus, because apparently there were people down there who were handing out flyers talking about what people should do in order to murder black folks. At any rate, there was a rally on campus, and Brother Issa was arrested. He was injured as a part of him being arrested, but they flipped the script, as usual, and said that he started it. And not only that, resisted arrest, and you know, some other trumped up kinds of things. We're going to talk to the brother tonight and get the full story, but also want you to know that there is a rally coming up on Tuesday, which of course is the day that many will be observing Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday, Earth Day. Not clear still why, since it's not his Earth Day, but what do I know? Anyway. This Tuesday, there is a rally, and the rally is to bring attention to the issue of the lynchings in Dover, Delaware, but also the unjust acts that have now been placed upon this brother. He is due to go to court very soon, and we want our people nationwide to know about this situation, to be supportive in whatever way possible, and to help spread the word. Because the one thing we know about this system, it is when they know that we're watching, when they know that we're spreading the word, they take some different kind of actions. We've seen that before. perfect case or scenario, of course, is with Mumia Abu-Jamal, meaning it was the power of the people who, in fact, made certain that Mumia would, in fact, be off of death row. And now the power of the people must continue the next step, which is, of course, to have him out totally, have him freed totally. With that said, before we go to our live line and talk with our brother, Brother Dr. Issa, we are going to find for you one of the latest commentaries for Mumia. Hopefully, we're going to try to find that for you. And with that said, let's see. I want to also remind everyone that if my voice sounds a little hoarse tonight, it is because one of my associates was, I was around him earlier and kind of what an additional little bug. I had one last week, and so we apologize for not being able to broadcast to you last week. But, again, we were kind of under the weather. At any rate, let's see what we're trying to do here. We're trying to find for you the latest commentary with Mumia. And I'm having a little difficulty locating there for you, so please just bear with us for a moment. I want to also remind you that we're going to open the live line, I mean the chat room, shall we say. We're going to open the chat room very, very shortly. And we are going to also open up the lines for you because we definitely want to make sure that if you should have any questions or comments, once you hear our brother, we want to make sure that you're able to ask him any questions you may like, and he certainly will have no problem in answering them for you. And if you have any other comments or suggestions, we certainly would love to hear that as well. All right. In the meantime, before we go to our live line and talk with our brother, Dr. Issa, we're going to provide for you one of the latest commentaries from Mumia Abu-Jamal.
If we listen to or watch corporate media, we heard a giant sigh of relief when the so-called fiscal cliff was narrowly averted. But as you said, the whole shebang was a congressional creation, a work of political theater, and the false alarm to protect those at the very top, the wealthy. What is lost here is that all the hype and rap about taxes, especially on businesses, is that they never had it so good. Back in the 1940s, do you know what the corporate tax rate was? 50%. That's right, 50%. In recent years, it hovered under 10%. But in fact, many corporations pay nothing, zero. That's because of what writer Mark Steppenbauer calls welfare, as in welfare for the rich. In his 2004 book, Take the Rich Off Welfare, he documents hundreds of cases where corporations buy all politicians, write their own laws, and if all else, flee to the Cayman Islands, where billions of dollars get written off of the tax bill. Steppenbauer, writing over a decade ago, documented the fact that almost 600 banks opened up state offices in the Cayman and over 30,000 companies. Why? To create tax write-offs. There is a fiscal crisis in America, but it's because of decades of policy of cutting taxes and the doctrine of deregulation. This is made possible by corporations renting or buying politicians. It has wrecked state and federal budgets. In other words, it has worked just as they planned. From a prison nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Okay, again, that was Mumia Abu-Jamal with one of the latest commentaries talking about this insanity of these new kinds of crises that they come up with, and of course, how continuously the wealthy folk, still get the ability to get these other little breaks. Not little breaks, by the way, but certainly they're able to take advantage of many, many perks, let's put it that way. Okay, we're going to give you another report a little later on an upcoming strategy session is going to take place here in Philadelphia as part of the next phase of freeing Mumia Abu-Jamal. There is something called free in four, meaning to have Mumia literally freed within 4 years. And again, there is a planning session coming up here in Philadelphia at Temple University that will focus on some of the next steps to make that happen. I'm going to give you more information about that very, very shortly. Okay, let's get ready to go to our live line now. And again, we are going to talk about strange fruit. Now, for those of you who have never heard that phrase, I suggest you Google it and particularly listen to a song that became very popular by the incredible Billie Holiday, who in fact witnessed strange fruit on one of her journeys. Of course, she was a performer, an excellent, excellent singer, songstress, and in traveling to a gig, she bore witness to strange fruit. And as a result, a song came about, and it today is one of the most, well, check it out. Maybe we'll find it for you before we leave tonight, but nevertheless, we have strange fruit going on now, family, right in good old Delaware, the so-called first state. And with that said, we now also have, you know, a brother who, as a result of getting involved, and again, we applaud this brother because so many folks today run away when they see danger or what's perceived as danger or when they find themselves having to possibly go up against the system and some of the injustices that the system tends to want to inflict upon us. Well, many today do exit stage left. So fortunately, this brother, obtaining some information, followed up, and then received even more information. But I'm going to let him tell you about it. He certainly can do so better than I, and we certainly appreciate him taking the time to join us. And before we conclude tonight, we will provide you all with information on how you can support, and I know that you will because you are the type of folk that do that. Well, without further ado, we're going to go to our live line, and joining us is Brother Jiha Issa, and we're going to talk about strange fruit and trouble in Delaware, in Dover, Delaware. So we're going to open up our line, and Brother Issa, are you on this line with us?
Yes, I am.
Oh, good, thanks. Greetings to you this evening.
Yeah, greetings to you, Empress. Greetings. Thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, it is indeed a pleasure. Well, we're going to talk about some strange fruit today. So I guess we need to begin at the beginning.
Okay.
You have the mic, my brother. Will you please feel free? We have at least an hour. So feel free to, you know, tell us about what has happened. We have listeners tuning in from many, many states, many communities, and, you know, we definitely want to hear and know more about what has happened. Again, we appreciate you sharing the information with us. And, you know, one thing that we do here at New Day Resurrection Liberation is we like to get the direct information. We don't like to hear it from somebody else unless it's, you know, something that we have to do. But 9 out of 10, we get our information directly from the source. So we've been hearing, you know, here and there about there being some rumblings and you know, to go a step further, lynchings in Delaware. I have not had the opportunity to talk to anyone directly who was in the area, and so again, you know, we feel very blessed to have you with us tonight. And again, with that said, you know, please feel free to start where you'd like.
Well, okay. Again, I'd like to thank you for allowing me to come on your show and speak to your listening audience, your supporters. My name is Jahi Uchi Issa. I was born and raised in St. Louis, Missouri. I went off to college, Southern University in Baton Rouge, where I earned a football scholarship, and I played there at Southern University. And that was, actually growing up in the St. Louis community, I was indoctrinated with the ideology of black nationalism due to the several black bookstores that were there. And so as a child, I would walk to various black bookstores and, you know, we'll be able to hear lectures of Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark. And I knew at an early age that's who I wanted to be. You know, as a lot of kids want to be, you know, firemen and policemen. But at about the age of 12, I knew that I was going to teach history somehow and relate it to our struggle, our global struggle. I actually ended up transferring from Southern University to Texas Southern University, another historically black college, and got my bachelor's degree, went back to Southern, did my master's, then went off briefly to seminary, or some people say cemetery school, and at Emory. Then went to Howard to do my PhD. My training within the black community actually came under the guidance of Jeremoji Abebe Ajima, who was the founder of the Shrines of the Black Madonna. And I joined the Shrines of the Black Madonna of the Pan-African Orthodox Christian Church in the early 90s and maintained my membership until for several years there, where I lived as a cadre member. And at Delaware State University, I came there in 2008. Before then, I was teaching at another historically black college called Elizabeth City State University. And I noticed when I got to Delaware State University that, I didn't notice that the white faculty were bragging that the school was moving in the path of being a white college. And I kept asking myself, how is this possible? How can a school that's protected by federal law of being a black college for black people possibly end up being a white college? I didn't understand. And I saw the same trend at Elizabeth City State University. So after my first semester at Delaware State University, I had a white faculty member who happens to be the head of the AAUP, which is the union, the largest union for university professors in the country. He walked up to me and he essentially told me that, this is a white college now, and that my lectures were too black, and that I was offending white students with my lectures. I teach African American history and Africana studies, and that if I wasn't careful, I would be fired, and there's some crazy white people at the university. And so I just looked at him. I'm like, look, dude, you're about 5'6". I'm 6'1". You need to just leave my office now. You don't know me. And ever since then, I was just getting a tremendous amount of, I was being harassed constantly, bomb threats. They threatened to blow up. First they said that I was going to blow up the building. I was assaulted by a white professor. It was just constant. I would walk into my office. My books would be overturned, all my books and research papers, to the point where I had to leave my office and start having office hours in the computer lab because the threats and attacks against me were so severe. And no matter what, I made reports to the president of the university. He wouldn't do anything. So I wrote this article called, and it was September of 2011. It was published by the Black Agenda Report. The article was called "How Black Colleges Are Turning White: The Ethnic Cleansing of HBCUs in the Age of Obama." And, you know, it was a research piece that you can find on the internet that where I was looking at how systematically historically black colleges were being forced by the federal government to actually move into a predominantly or majority white populations. And I showed how several schools have already undergone this, but yet they're still receiving federal funding that's geared toward African Americans. And I showed how the White House was participating in this. And I think I even talked about various individuals. And so 3 days after the article was published, according to the Black Agenda Report, it had reached almost 10,000 downloads. And the third day, someone hacked into the Black Agenda Report and shut down their website. And their website had never been hacked into before. And then shortly after that, the attacks on me at the university increased. They only increased. And so the students began to demand that I speak at various platforms, student-led platforms, about the school turning white, Delaware State. My article is not about Delaware State. It's about the 105 historically black colleges that are under federal guidance for being federal protection for being historically black colleges. I began lecturing throughout the campus, talking about the importance of Delaware State and other universities that are black are maintaining their historical positions. And so the students, in February of 2012, someone in the community heard that I was about to start a black newspaper for Delaware. Delaware has about 1 million people that live in it, but almost one-fourth of the people here are black. I think it's like 23%. Right? Yeah. But there are no black newspapers. And so someone from the community just heard, hey, there's a black professor who's an activist. And they came to the university and they handed me a flyer. And I asked them, what is this? And they were like, well, look at it. And I looked at it and I'm like, okay, what is it? And they said, well, somebody put this throughout the downtown community where the black community is in Delaware. And I said, are you serious? And they said, yes. And the flyer depicts a black man hanging from the tree. And the flyer reads, cleaning our streets one nigger at a time. And it's a black man hanging from a tree. And I'm like, who put this out? You know, so this is early February. I got it. And they said, well, why don't you come down in the community and talk to the people? We're afraid that they're going to start killing us. And so originally I thought it was a joke, a prank, you know, but I said, well, maybe this may be a good story for my newspaper once I get it rolling. And so I went downtown. I went to several residents. They not only told me that this flyer actually had been out since December of 2011, but some police officers went door to door asking people who had the flyer and asking if they would hand the flyers over to the police. And so some of them told me that they were afraid. And then someone told me there was a young man that was found hanging from a tree in 2010. But when I began to investigate it, people were telling me, local authorities were saying that this young man was white. It was only recently that I found out he was black because his mother called me at 1 o'clock in the morning after an organization called the War on the Horizon came down and did a story on these lynchings. So if you go to waronthehorizon.com and click on the war room, you'll see all the stories. They interviewed all the families of the young men who have been found hanging on trees in Delaware. And so back to February, I decided that I was going to wait until I was beginning I was starting on the history of the civil rights movement in the United States, and I was lecturing on Emmett Till, and that's when I decided to bring the flyer out as a primary source, so that the students could see that these type of atrocities are still going on in this country. But at that time, I wasn't sure if people were lynched people were hanging from trees. Well, students being young and adventurous, one student took a picture of the flyer that I had in the class, and I don't know, I wasn't thinking, but they took a picture, and the next thing you know, the thing went viral throughout campus. And a day or two later, the students had a rally on campus, and they were passing out, they had reproduced the flyer, and they began passing out the flyer, warning other students that, hey, this is serious. Somebody put this flyer out, and we need to be careful about where we're going, Delaware, or we may end up on a tree. And someone came in, one of the faculty members came and told me there was a group of students having a rally. I'm like, what students, whose students could this be? So I go out, they're my students. And they weren't doing anything. They were just standing in a circle singing civil rights songs and handing out flyers. But the university police came to the students and told, after I left, and told them that that they could not pass out these flyers and that they didn't have a right. The students were angry. They called me. I decided to call the ACLU. The ACLU told the students that that was a violation of their First Amendment right. And the students made a decision that the next day, which happened to be the Board of Trustees meeting, that they were going to go to the Board of Trustees and talk about an array of issues, one being the university turning into a white college, two, the lynchings, the flyers, and them being worried about that this could happen to them, and three, they were talking about the lack of African-American professors at a historically black college. Delaware State, which is more than 45, which is so about 65% African-Americans students, has less than 15% African-American faculty, with the vast majority of them being at retirement age. And so the students decided that the next day that they were going to have a rally. I did support them. They told me not to come out. They said, Dr. Easy, these people are out to get you. Don't come out. And I said, okay, I'll just meet you at the Board of Trustees. But the morning of the rally, students began calling me and telling me that the administration said threatened to arrest any student that had a rally. And I said, well, why would they do that? Why would they arrest any student to do that? Because the white students at the university had a protest and rally with their horses, the white equestrian team, a year and a half prior. And the faculty was there, administrators were there, and no one was arrested. I know because I was there. I was probably the only black person there. And I said, well, why would they do this to black students? So I came out. And I said, well, you know, if they're going to arrest somebody, I need to be out there to make sure that this doesn't happen. I come out there, and everything was very peaceful. The students were getting ready to walk from the Martin Luther King Student Center to the administration building. And right before they started, a university employee walked up to me, yanked my arm, and I resisted him, and I said, why did you just grab me? And he said, you're not supposed to be out here. Oh, well, I'm a faculty member. I can be out here. And then I turned around. He grabbed my arm again from the back. And when he grabbed me from the back, two police officers, I didn't see them, they came from behind, came up to me, grabbed my arm, put me in an arrest position. They said nothing to me, and started to push me along the crowd. I eventually ended up falling out, passing out. At the time, I didn't know that my blood pressure was way over 100, 200, 200, and I pass out, and I leave on an ambulance. No police officer got on the ambulance. I'm at the hospital for a few hours. The university police, a white university police officer, comes into the hospital, arrests me on my emergency bed, and but there were several students there, and my wife and children were there, and they raised a lot of hell, and so he called in the Dover police. I was again arrested. I was arrested like 3 or 4 times that day, and handcuffed, walked out of the hospital, put into a jail cell, and I was there for several hours. I got out. They told me several white, I'm assuming they were white, Dover police officers, because they had on uniforms and they had their sleeves rolled up. And they walked out and said, you know, we have a form that we want you to sign. And I said that I'm not signing anything without the consent of an attorney. I have a right to get an attorney. They said, no, you're going to sign it right now. And I said, if I don't sign it, what is going to happen? And these three white officers began to walk. I think it was 2 or 3 of them. They walked toward me, and they said, I asked them, are you here to hurt me? And they said, yep. And that's when I decided that I was going to sign this document. And the document essentially said that if I came up to Delaware State, I would be arrested. And so I would be arrested for trespassing. Now, I'm still a faculty member there. Mm. And so the next day, you know, it was like a big dream to me, you know. The next day, 2 days later, someone breaks into my home while my wife was there by herself. I had taken my children to the library, and they put a package there, and the package came from Delaware State. Now, they broke into my home. We even called the police and just to put this packet there. And the bad package basically said that I was on paid administrative leave, and that I could not speak or talk to any university employee or student. And very fascist, very fascist. And so several days, I decided at that time that I would just start walking around the local park in Dover, Delaware, which is called Silver Lake Park. And I was walking there. I was in that park twice a day, sometimes 6 times a week. I would go in the evenings with my children and let them play, and I would walk around the park and just to release stress. And after about a month and a half of doing this, my wife decided to come with me one time to walk around the park with me. And when we walked around the park, I'll never forget this. I think this was on May the 9th. She said, this is a very evil place. She said, there are too many dark spots in this place. And she said, I can't believe that you walk around this park and you allow our children to play while they're not in your full sight. And I said, well, I've been doing this for almost 2 months. No, there's nothing going on. She said, don't you see these people are following you here? And I said, yeah, they're always here. I don't know who they are, but I'm not worried about it. And so 2 days later, my wife works the midnight shift. 2 days later, I get a call at about 1 a.m. from my wife, and she said, I told you so. They found a black man hanging from a tree at the park. And I said, what park? Just the park that I told you to stop going to. And I Googled it, and I'm like, it's not in a newspaper. How could this be true? So the next day, I went to my local barber, my barber shop, and I asked the young man who cuts my hair, and I said, I asked him, have you heard about this man allegedly hanging himself from a tree at Silver Lake Park? And my barber said, yes, that's my cousin. I said, really? And I said, well, is he, do you think he hung himself? I was suspicious. I mean, from the very beginning, I'm like, black people, somebody going to hang themselves on a park in the broad daylight? Who would do that? And so a black male, at least, on a tree, on an oak tree. So I asked him again, and he said, yeah, he used to work in here. He probably cut your hair. And I said, oh, and he showed me the picture, and I said, yeah, I know him. And he said, yeah. And so I said, well, what is his family saying? He said, I don't know. I haven't talked to the family. So I asked him to show me where the family lived. I went over there, and as a member of the NAACP, I began to immediately start investigating. And after talking to about 15 people, no one in the community nor families believed that this man went there to hang himself from a tree. And so I called the state NAACP and asked them for help. They wouldn't help. I called the national office. The SELC. I talked to several black legislators in the state. They wouldn't help. And, you know, it was just unbelievable at that time. And because I realized that this man, I didn't believe that this man hung himself. So I helped the family to get the autopsy report. And we even reenacted. They say that he hung himself with his belt. There were so many inconsistencies. The state, the police refused to give the family the police report. And so it was turning out to look like it was starting to be, it was beginning to look like a cover up, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and I was really suspicious because I was at the park. And I'm like, now, could this possibly be someone doing something in an attempt that was geared toward me? And I said, you know, because I was at the park, and I'm like, why would someone do this? You know, and so I began to talk to the local residents, and they began to say, look, there's been a lot of stuff like this going on for years. And so I continued to pressure the issue. There was a lot of pressure put on the family. The families, the brothers of the victims, they told me that they were told not to deal with me again. So I let it go for about a week and a half. I get a call at 9 in the morning from one of the brothers, and he said, Dr. Issa, we know that you weren't lying now. We understand what lynchings are now, because they told me that they didn't even know what a lynching was. They told me this. And if you look at the video on Warner Horizon, one of the local community leaders even said that they had no idea what a lynching was. And so he asked to meet me at a secret location, and I called another professor from the university and another activist. And he began to tell us how they believed that their brother was lynched. And so they said, we even know the tree that he was lynched on. And so they took me to the spot, and they said earlier that morning they went there and they found like a white supremacist encampment there, right? And they got a lot of the paraphernalia from the place.
Right.
And a few weeks later, after they said they wanted, they told me that they were ready to go public. And I called some of my friends who worked for Radio One, and we were ready to do an interview with them. And several of the brothers were arrested. They were arrested in jail. And so that was the end of that. And this was May, something like May, April, June. So in September, I'm at home. I get a call September the 19th, I think. I get a call around 7 in the morning from a young lady who was helping me investigate these lynchings. And I'll never forget, because when we were investigating the first lynching, we went to the place where the young man was allegedly lynched, and there was a group of white men that drove in trucks into the park, and they began looking at us, staring us down, and we knew that these guys possibly knew that we were there investigating these murders that the state had deemed as suicides, and everybody pretty much got scared, and I told them, look, if you show these people any fear, they will come after your children. So you look them dead in the eyes. Don't blink. And I said, then you will see that they will leave. And so we just stared at them, and they left. And 2 months later, she called me at 7 in the morning, the same lady who told me, "Dr. Issa, I'm not getting involved. This is too dangerous." And I said, "If you don't, they will come after your son." She said, "Oh, they won't come after my son." 2 months later, they came after her godson. She called me at 7 o'clock in the morning and informed me that her godson was abducted by gunpoint and taken out to that park, Civil Lake Park, where two white men who also confessed to killing and lynching the previous brother that was lynched in May at the park. They said that they killed him, they lynched him, and that day was the day that he had to die, September. They told him that he had to die. His whole story is on War on the Horizon. If you go there, you'll see the story and him talking about what happened. And he said that they tried to cut off his penis. They tried to cut off his ear.
Wow.
Now, you know, I'm listening to this on the phone, me and my wife, and I'm like, this could be a setup. You know, these people are already angry because I got the family, one of the families, to get on the radio. And so I was hesitant about going over there. I finally decided to go over and talk to the young man because they wanted to come over to my place. And when I went over, he showed me the where they tried to cut off his ear. He showed me the marks on his neck. They had tied a belt around his neck. And, you know, the ambulance had taken him to the hospital that morning. And I knew that this young man was telling the truth because the brother only had like a sixth grade education, and he was explaining in details the rituals of lynchings, right? And, you know, and I'm like, so I ended up calling other people over to come and investigate and hear this young brother talk about how they tried to lynch him at the same park. But he got away. Thank God he got away. And he got away because he was screaming for his life, and some residents who happened to be European Americans overheard him screaming. They lived near the park, and they cut on their floodlights, and they saw these white men running towards him, and they immediately called the police and the ambulance, and that's what saved him. But he explains in detail. If you go to War on the Horizon, you look at their video, he explains in detail what happened. Since all of this has happened, I've been constantly followed by, I don't know if it's FBI or state intelligence police. My phones have been bugged. Documents were stolen out of my apartment, jump drives. My Google phone has been hacked. Constantly followed. I am constantly followed. When I say constantly, I am followed all the time. I was eventually fired on August the 17th. And really, you know, no one in the state is really allowed to really even deal with me. But I've been an advocate for the state to investigate these murders. I've called the Department of Justice. I've talked with officials in the Department of Justice. I made a complaint with the FBI, to no avail. No one is really taking this seriously. We even tried to give an affidavit to the Attorney General, who happens to be Bo Biden. Bo Biden is also the individual he's prosecuting me in my case. And so so I'm dealing with several issues here. One, I wrote a very thought-provoking article that pretty much criticized the state and other states for illegally turning historically black colleges white. Two, I began to investigate some murders, some lynchings, ritual lynchings in the state. And three, I'm being prosecuted by the Attorney General son, the Attorney General of Delaware, who happens to be the Vice President's son. We had a hearing on December the 4th, as I wind down so that people can ask questions. We had a hearing on December the 4th where I had supporters come from all over the country. I had students mm-hmm. from Howard University come. I had a group of people from the North Carolina NAACP show come up. And the officers who arrested me admitted under oath that they had no probable cause to arrest me. So you would mm-hmm. think that the judge would drop the charges. No. The judge refused to allow us to bring in our witnesses. He didn't drop the charges. He told us he would get back with us within one mm-hmm. or 2 weeks. To this day, this is the fifth week we have yet to hear from the judge. And so this is where the case is now. And so because of that hearing, many of the people in the hearing, my supporters, saw the injustice and during the testimonies. And they told me that if we didn't hear anything back within a week or two, then they were going to organize a march in Dover and bring supporters. And so that's where we're having this march on Dr. King's birthday. Now, the march is going to be two parts. One, people will line out in front of Delaware State University and talk mm-hmm. about they're going to talk about the my firing. And then in December, I'm holding up because all of a sudden this cadre of police officers I'm outside in my car and they're driving past me, which is kind of mm-hmm. unusual for this area.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, you know. Then at 2 o'clock we're gonna march around the state legislator and we're gonna talk about we're gonna have a lot of people talking about the lynchings, and we're putting together a petition to ask the President of the United States to pass an anti-lynching bill. Since the War on the Horizon did this video series on these lynchings, I've had other family members call me and tell me from all over the country that they believe that their sons have been lynched. And all of these lynchings are being ruled by various states as suicides. So all of a sudden we have black men hanging themselves on trees. And the state want us, the states, not just Delaware, but other states also want us to believe that these are suicides. And this is where we're at. So if people want to learn more about the march, they can go to March on Dover Blogspot. And we got an endorsement from Alveda King, who's Dr. King's niece. She endorsed it, and then Sister Pam Africa heard me speak about this in Baltimore, and then Automatics invited me up to speak. He's coming down, Pam Africa. Mm-hmm. We have an array of people who are going to be talking about various issues, not just the lynchings in my case, but the mass incarceration of black men, because going through this, I've been able to really, really see what a lot of our brothers are going through, and sisters who are caught into this criminal justice injustice system. And they're coming out of the prisons on some of them $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $40,000, $50,000 that they have to pay in fines. And it's just been a wake up call for me. And so that's the bulk of it in a nutshell.
Wow. Well, that's certainly more than a nutshell, needless to say. I mean, you would think in this day and age to hear about lynchings. And again, we are very close to Dover, Delaware, so 'cause we're here in Philadelphia. So, you know, to hear that there's lynchings going on in this day and age. Brother, tell me, what year did this last incident occur? Was it 2012 or 2011?
Yeah, 2012. But we later found out that there was a young man hanging from a tree in at a local college in 2010. Now, when I started investigating this, Some of the local authorities told me he was white. But it was once Warner Horizon did this video, his mother called me around 1 o'clock in the morning. And I was shocked because I said, "You sound black." And she said, "Of course I'm black." And I said, "Well, some of the black local officials were saying that the young man was white. Did you adopt him?" She said, "No, that was my natural son." And I'm like, they intentionally misled me. And these are black people. So that, you know, we wouldn't know that that this young man who was found hanging from a tree at Wesley College in Dover was a 19-year-old star athlete, and he was found hanging with his own belt from a tree. And the mother said that they didn't do a proper investigation. They didn't let her know for a couple of days, just like the other young man who was found hanging from a tree. I mean, so many things wrong that didn't go right with the investigations. And so we believe that there are cover-ups. And so, you know, that's where we are. You know, unfortunately, that's where we are in our history. And it's been almost 100 years since W.E.B. Du Bois, when he was a member of the NAACP, led an anti-lynching march. And here we are again in 2013, 100 years later talking about the same thing. So it's as if lynchings never really stopped, you know, and now the state is covering them up. And people are afraid to talk about it, but I continue to talk about it and investigate. And I've been going to every state committee. Wherever I get a chance, I say something about the lynchings. And, of course, nobody wants to hear it. And so, but hopefully after Tuesday, this will become a national issue. Also, the university, Delaware State University, in trying to get me to admit that I hit some officers, they wrote a letter basically saying that if I agreed to 10 points, they would drop the charges against me. And these 10 points, one of the points, they wanted me to admit that I brought a flyer on campus. You know, in other words, they're trying to force me to say that I was the author of this flyer that depicted black men being lynched. And so, you know, I said, wow, why would they write this? No black person, even in a black person who was misguided, would ever say something like this, you know.
Yes.
And so we later found out it was the university's attorney, who's white, who wrote this. And so we've always asked ourselves, why would this guy write this in a letter stating that I should admit to basically authoring a flyer that depicted a black man lynching? What are they trying to cover up? How far does this thing go up? And why isn't the state attorney general, Bo Biden, investigating it? Why is he covering it up? And
absolutely.
So, and why is he even prosecuting me when there was never any credible evidence that suggested that I offensively touched an officer or resisted arrest, but yet I'm looking at more than 2 years in prison for doing this, for allegedly doing these things. And now that these officers have admitted that they had no reason to arrest me and that a university employee told them to arrest me, you know, the charges should have been dropped. But this is where I stand as of now.
Okay. We're going to go to our lines. We have a couple of folk that have comments or questions, and so we're going to take this time to engage some of our extended family who have been tuning in. You are in tune to New Day Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and we are talking with Dr. Issa, who has just given us a very clear view of lynchings that's going on in this day and age. In Delaware, Dover, Delaware, and certainly around the country, but we have right in our midst information that certainly indicates that, you know, it's happening. And I guess the question now is, what are we going to do? So let's go to our live line. Caller, you are at 2127. Do you have a comment or a question for us tonight?
Yes, Empress T. Hello, Dr. Issa. This is Doug Beatty calling from Delaware. Dr. Issa and I have been working together probably since about October 6th investigating these issues. And one of the things that was disturbing to me was we were on the street near where Johnny Clark had lived, and we were talking to some people on a porch, and two older gentlemen said, oh, yeah, you know, and they hung that guy down in 2000, and they cut his, and I'll say, genitals off. And
right.
I said, lynch. And they said, no, they hung him and cut his genitals off. There is really no sense of what a traditional lynching is in, or ritual lynching is in that part of Dover. So,
right.
You know, I don't think that Mr. Fordham was making his story up. I believe he was telling the truth. And I looked the police chief in the eye at a city council meeting, and he told me he had no probable cause to investigate the assault in Henry Fordham. So Dr. Issa is 100% correct. This is a very bad cover-up. And he's also being a little bit modest. A video surfaced of him being arrested the day after the DSU public safety chief testified. And Dr. Issa did absolutely nothing to get arrested for. If anybody was offensively touching and being disorderly, that would be DSU Public Safety Chief Harry Downs.
Okay, wonderful. Well, thank
yeah,
you so much.
Yeah, this is Doug Beatty. Doug Beatty is the son of Ned Beatty. Doug Beatty, as you can probably tell, is a European-American. He's also a local political activist. He was running for office when I interrupted a political campaign. And I asked all these white politicians who were running for office to help us with these lynchings. And he was the one I helped. And he's been helping us ever since. He's been helping us with the investigation. And he's also been writing and blogging about my case. And you can find his blog is Trouble. What is the blog, Doug?
It's troubleindover.blogspot.com, but people can also find it by typing in doublebad.net. It will take them right to the blog.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for that information and helping to provide even, you know, some additional clarity.
Thank you, Empress.
You're welcome. Okay, we have another caller. Let's see. Caller, we're going to go to you at 8392. Do you have a comment or a question for us for tonight?
Well, I just I had a comment. My name is Malik. I'm from Seaford. I just want to tell you my support, what you're doing. I'm adamantly against, you know, modern day lynching a black man. Personally, I use bullets a lot better. Allah Akbar, I'm right on the gun.
Okay, and, you know, I'm glad that that person came on because, you know, people need to really hear.
What did he say? I didn't understand.
I don't really know what he said, but whatever he said, he was laughing. It was a European who thought that this topic was a funny topic and was, you know, trying to make a mockery. And I'm glad that he did, in a way, because people need to wake up and realize that in this day and age, we have this type of mentality in our midst. And you all just heard it live. There it was.
Yeah, and there's a lot of intimidation going on here in Delaware, a whole lot of intimidation. People are afraid. People are afraid, people are rightfully afraid, you know, especially when you have the Attorney General who refuses to investigate and who's blocking, essentially, in my opinion, any type of federal investigation. And so this is where we are. I'm not shocked. I'm not shocked at all.
No, not at all. in the midst of a Trayvon Martin, and we recently got a report of another young brother who was also murdered in Florida recently. That's
right.
Not being aired too often, but it did happen. And very similar situation. A white guy saw a young black man, and they had music on in their car, and he said to turn the music down, and the young brother said no, and he shot him. And this just recently happened. So these cases are right in our midst, and it's really up to us to decide realistically how and what are we going to do about these things, because it's only going to increase.
Yes, it's going to increase. No, we're not seeing the end of this. I mean, we're looking at a lot of issues. One, you know, no matter how some of us may feel about President Barack Obama, there are a lot of people who are extremely angry that this is a man of color. And two, we're looking at a country that within the next 20 years is going to be a majority non-white population. And a lot of European Americans are having a difficult time dealing with this. And so what they are doing is just targeting black men. Not to say that they have never, that they haven't been doing this in the past. But now they're not hiding it. I mean, if you look at what happened in Delaware, excuse me one second, I'm trying to cut down my speech on Malcolm X. If you look at what happened in Delaware, I mean, these people put out a flyer throughout the black community that depicted a black man hanging from a tree, and then we find at least one right after the flyer that we know of, one black man hanging from a tree, and it could and an attempted lynching. And we even know who these individuals are who did this. We gave their names to the mayor of Dover. We gave their names to authorities, and they refused to arrest these men. So my question is to this white, obvious white supremacist who called, I'm not sure if he's a police officer or a paramilitary governmental official, why is the state protecting mass serial killers? And so, I mean, I can answer that myself, but I think the real issue is, why are black people allowing this to continually happen? And that's my issue, you know, because we've dealt with these issues in our past, in our history before. And here we are again. And until it affects us personally, we don't want to get involved.
Yes.
You know, like you said, Empress, we're witnessing the beginning of this. This is not. I really believe in the next couple of years there's going to be so many lynchings going on in this country unless black people make the decision to protect themselves. And this brings up the issue of the Second Amendment and people's rights to bear arms. You know, and I have to say this. You know, because I really believe that these young men had guns, and these people who, I can't even say racist, these obvious, just serial killers, that's what they are, they're serial killers. If they know that people are carrying guns, they would think twice about trying to put somebody on a tree. And so for me as an African-American man, to get a call at 1 o'clock in the morning from an African-American mother, it brought tears to my eyes. You know, I've also been dialoguing with another lady who will be here at the march speaking. Her son was lynched at San Jose College, San Jose State University. You can go to March on Dover blogspot and look at her link, and they linked her son, and her case went all the way up to the Attorney General of the United States, Mr. Eric Holder, and the FBI wrote her a letter basically saying that they had to stop the investigation because if they continued it, it would be a threat to national security. So
wow.
Now the federal government, blocking investigations of black men hanging from trees. And so, in my wildest dream, I would have never thought that this is what I'll be talking about. Of course, I would have never thought that I would have been arrested at a university for just standing outside and supporting my students. You know, these are the times that we live in.
Well, Dr. Issa, let's do this. Give out the information again for the rally on Tuesday. And what I'd like to do is bring you back next week with part two. We'll give a report on the rally that's happening on Tuesday. And then also, we're going to give folks time to really marinate and think about this issue and what has happened, and come back next week with some real types of action steps or plans or what have you. So, again, family, what we're asking you all to do is, you've heard what has happened. If you missed some part of it, feel free to go to our website, because after the show is aired tonight, it's in our archives. You can hear it anytime, as often as you may wish. If there's something that you missed or something you need to review again, feel free to go to our on-demand segment of our website, and you'll be able to pull this interview up for tonight. But what I'm saying is, we can't just have a dialogue. We've got to also have some interaction and exchange of what can we do, what must we do. And so we want to come back next Saturday, revisit this, have a report on the rally that's going to be happening on Tuesday, and then open up the lines for folks to say, what are we going to do? Simple as that. So, Dr. Issa, right. Please give that information again on Tuesday, and I'm certainly coming.
Right. The information, you can go to March on Dover Blogspot, March on Dover Blogspot. If you want more personal information, you can email me at jahiissa65@gmail.com. And really quick, just want to say this. This lady who's coming in from California, whose son was lynched in San Jose University, she has gotten numerous of death threats where white men are calling her home and threatening her constantly. And so on my Facebook page, I've been crying out to black men. I mean, what type of men are we? You know,
right.
What type of men are we? Well, we know these type of atrocities are taking place, and we refuse to confront them. And what I'm saying is essential. There are a lot of actions that we can take. We can petition government. There are a lot of things that we can do, but we're not doing anything. I've been crying out loud for the last 8 months over these issues, and I haven't had much leeway. But I am grateful of people like you for allowing me to come on. And I do want to say this before I end, before your show ends, is that this whole issue has cost me dearly. You know, I lost my job as a university professor. I have 5 children, all under the age of 14. I'm on food stamps and Medicaid, and you know, I'm basically, you know, an unemployment. I get unemployment checks, but you know, to go from $65,000 a year to $12,000 a year, you know, for trumped up charges, you know, and for just standing up for right, what's right, and not having anybody to support you. Psychologically, economically, it has been extremely difficult for my family, you know, but I really had no choice. Either turn the other way, you know, I couldn't just turn the other way and act like these things didn't happen, because I know that these people will come after you, you know. And so I just want people to know that. Also, if they want to support me, economically, support my legal defense fund, because it is it's very expensive. They can go to HBCUinstitute.org. That's HBCUinstitute.org.
Thanks. All right, family, you have all heard the information, and I'm certain that you will be responding in some type of way if you're in the Philadelphia, New Jersey, or New York area. Please come out and support the rally on Tuesday. Give us that time and location again, Dr. Issa.
Yeah, we will start off first from 11 to 12 o'clock, rain or shine. We'll be out in front of Delaware State University for an hour and a half from 11 to 12:30. And then at 2 o'clock, from 2 to 4, we will march around the state legislators' mall, which is downtown Dover. We'll be meeting on Lockerman and New Street. Many of the streets will be cut off because we later found out that it's the same time of the governor's inauguration. And so we'll march over there, and we will have a speak out. So you can go to, and then from 5 to 7, we'll have a Martin Luther King lecture at the Public Library. So you can go to March on Dover Blogspot, .com, and March on Dover Blogspot, click under Schedule of Events, and you'll see all of the events and the speakers.
All righty. Well, again, my brother, we thank you for taking the opportunity to bring this information to us tonight. And, wow, what more can I say? I mean, it's an ongoing struggle, and we must stay very focused and very committed. And again, I want to thank you for, you know, being courageous and not being a weak link and other things, as unfortunately so many has become. Again, I certainly am planning to attend on Tuesday when Sister Pam Africa called and told me about it. I knew that we had to get involved, and so we're very thankful, you know, to do so and to share this information with our extended family. So, my brother, again, please give your contact information. And we're going to do part two next week with bringing a report on the rally, and also be ready to talk more about what we're going to do.
Right. Again, you can go to March on Dover blogspot.com. That's March on Dover blogspot. If you want to know more about the lynchings, you can go to Trouble in Dover blogspot. And Mr. Doug Beatty has written a lot. And if you want to actually see the videos of the people giving their own, from their own, these mothers, it's something to see these mothers talk about their sons hanging from trees. You know, you can go to warontherhorizon.com. That's warontherhorizon.com, and click under the War Room, and you will see several sites on Strange Fruit in Dover, and another link to this young man named, I think his name is Charles Conley, who was found hanging from a tree, a college student who was found hanging from a tree with his belt right here in Dover.
Okay. And also your direct email address?
J-A-H-I-I-S-S-A. 65@gmail.com. Another thing I might as well say before we end, I really believe the cover-up here in Dover has a lot to do with who's the vice president. We tend to forget that Vice President Joe Biden, this is his hometown, and his son is the vice president. Joe Biden Jr. is the attorney general from Delaware. And so obviously he doesn't feel that he has to obey the law and report hate crimes. He doesn't feel that way.
I believe
with a quote from Ella Baker. Ella Baker said, until the killing of black men, black mothers, sons, become as important to the rest of the country as the killing of white mothers' sons, who believe in freedom cannot rest until this happens.
Hmm. That's right.
That's what she said in 64.
That's right. No doubt about it. And Sweet Honey in the Rock created a song about
yes.
it.
Yes.
We who believe in freedom cannot rest.
Yes.
Hmm. Well, as we say, those of us who do these things on a day-to-day basis, sometimes 24/7, a lucha continua, the struggle does indeed continue. Dr. Issa, again, I want to thank you for joining us tonight. We look forward to having you back next week so that we can provide the report on the rally and any other updates. And family, again, please be ready to respond in such a way with suggestions for plans of action. I certainly have one already, and I know between now and next Saturday, I'll come up with a few more, and I know that our family listening audience will do that as well. Because our radio program is not just about conversation, it's not just about dialogue. It's about providing you with ample information for direct action. So with that said, we're going to close out tonight's session. And again, we thank all of you for tuning in. And we look forward to having you back next week. Please pass the word and let folks know. We're going to be talking more about strange fruit in 2013, in the 21st century. And what are we going to do? It used to be folks used to sit back and watch it. We've seen many pictures with people looking on as our people were hung from trees. Are we going to do that today? That's our question for next week. Dr. Issa, again, thank you very, very much. And I'll see you on Tuesday.
All right, see you Tuesday. Thank you very
All
much.
Right.
All right, bye-bye.
Peace to you. Okay, family, we're going to close this segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation out. We will be back next Saturday, and again with an update, and with some information about the upcoming Million Women March reunion. There's a lot of exciting developments that has, in fact, occurred, and we'll be providing you with a report about that as well. Remember, on February 28th, we'll make the announcement regarding the 16th year anniversary of the Million Women March, and we'll be letting you know very soon exactly where this mass gathering and commemoration will be held. Remember, on that day, the anniversary of the Million Women March, we will also declare the Year of the Black Girl from October 2013 through October 2014. We will make a serious commitment to our young daughters, sisters, nieces, granddaughters, etc. It's going to be their year. And we have a lot of activities and programs that is specifically designed for them. Not mentoring, but sistering. So until next week again, we hope that you have heard tonight's show in such a way that it will provoke and also inspire. But certainly make certain that you take a stand and definitely do something. Until next week, we leave you, as we oftentimes greet you, in the spirit of Ma'at and Hotep. But we also tell you that, remember, there can really be no true Ma'at, no true justice without Hotep, without peace. And believe it, there can be no peace at all, no way, no how, unless there is justice, Ma'at. So until then, remember, we move forward in the spirit of power, prosperity, and peace. But a lucha continua. The struggle does continue, and for culture to Shinda, together we shall win. Till next time, peace out.